Linoleum knife.
A late cast of the cinema. Yesterday was a holiday.
This show is called Linoleum Knife.
Yes.
It's a podcast of the cinema.
And we usually post earlier in the week than this.
What's your name?
I'm Alonzo Duraldi.
I'm Dave White.
Yes.
We're film critics.
We are.
Hey, guess where you're a film critic for right now?
The Wrap.
The Wrap.
Like, my furlough's not over.
You know, you're still furloughed from your actual job.
But
they brought you back in to do some Toronto reviews.
Correct.
Yeah.
So my review of One Night in Miami, which technically premiered at Venice and is also premiering at Toronto this week, is up. So please go read it. And I'll have a lot more in the next week or so. Keep an eye out for that.
Ain't nothing going on but The Rent.
But, you know.
That's a Gwen Guthrie song from back in the day.
Yes.
Y'all should go listen to that. It's very good.
But this is my main gig.
Normally, this show would be not on a Tuesday. But I will tell you a thing about Los Angeles this past weekend.
Woo.
It was 112 degrees. And that's not even a made-up number.
And that's not even the worst of the LA area.
Yeah.
It got to 121 in Woodland Hills.
Yeah, it was 112 in West Hollywood.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something about the geography of Los Angeles. First of all, it's very large.
Mm-hmm.
Southern California, the Southland.
Yes.
Very large. And the closer you are to the ocean, the cooler your temperatures are. So, for example, it was only about 100 degrees in Malibu.
Oh, chilly.
And that's insane, because if it's like an 88 degree day here,
mm-hmm.
it'll be like 66 in Malibu, and everyone's like, I need a light wrap.
Yes.
You know?
Maybe a second hoodie.
So, like, for it to be this hot on this side of the hill, because then you get over into the valley.
Yeah.
And where it's
always an oven.
It's an oven. Yeah. Well, the oven came to us.
Yes.
Now, we do have an air conditioner.
Thank goodness.
It's in our bedroom.
Yeah.
And in no other room of our apartment. So the rest of our apartment, including this recording area, was
a little baking.
112 degrees. And so we thought about moving everything into the bedroom to
We've
do the show.
We've done that before, heaven knows.
We did it before, but it's such a... it's the worst doing it in there because the air conditioner makes the noise and the little card table is rickety. There's no place to put all the equipment. It's just a pain. I thought, you know what?
It's inconvenient.
Let him wait.
For Dave.
Let him wait. I can wait. I like to think that we're worth waiting for just a little bit.
Sure. And again, Monday was technically a holiday.
That doesn't matter.
Even though nothing means anything anymore vis-a-vis time.
Yeah, that doesn't
time
matter.
Off.
We would have recorded yesterday too, but it was also gross yesterday
it was.
As well. So it's not gross anymore today.
No.
Today, all we have is fire ash raining down from the skies.
Yes, thanks to the gender reveal party.
Yeah. Ugh. We're calling them genital reveal parties now.
Well, yeah, that's yeah. really what they're about.
Yeah. So the, what's happening? We talk about movies here on this show. We're film critics. And,
yes.
And so that's what's happening. Mulan.
Yes.
Oh, you know what, though?
What?
You know what?
What?
There's news.
Mm.
News that everybody knows. And we waited on it. We didn't talk about it the last show because it had just happened.
Yes.
And I'm not a fan of diving in with the I'm first comments, you know, about something. Particularly when it's something really awful. And a really awful thing happened. Chadwick
yes.
Boseman
yes.
died. And, you know, we, the folks who were not his colleagues and friends and family, didn't know it was coming.
Apparently a lot of his colleagues didn't know either.
Really?
Yeah. Like muckety mucks at Marvel were like, didn't know a thing about it.
I see. Well, you know, can you trust him?
Eh.
You don't know if you can trust him. Tell the people you can trust.
Oh, no, no. If you mean, yeah, absolutely. I see what you mean. Yes.
This is a very big loss.
Yes.
And we're not going to say anything that anyone hasn't already said, but it needs to be acknowledged that we, Alonzo and I, became aware of him with films like Get On Up and...
42.
And 42. And I remember having conversations about him early on in leading roles where we would say, oh, this is the guy.
Yeah.
Like, this is the guy to watch. Like, the movies might have been good or okay, but you knew it watching him. This was the guy to watch. And then, obviously, Black Panther, you know, was so...
paradigm-shifting.
Yeah. And it's just, it's awful.
Yeah.
You know, when someone goes too young and you were hoping that you would get to be alive alongside them as their career progressed and you could watch and you could, you know.
See them evolve as an artist.
Yeah. Yeah. There was this, I've said this on another podcast, maybe it was this one. An old quote from Don Cornelius, the host of Soul Train.
Oh, right, right.
Aretha Franklin would always go on Soul Train and perform live. She didn't like the lip sync.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody ever performed live on shows like that or American Bandstand
or
anything like that.
Top of the Pops.
She wouldn't do it. She'd sing live. And he said one time, introducing her, I'm lucky to be alive at the same time that this woman is singing. And basically, and so are you.
Right.
And so that's how you feel about people who are really great at the thing they do, creative people, artists. You're watching them work and you're watching them contribute and you're watching them shape the culture.
Yeah.
And then if they get taken, you feel cheated out of that.
Yeah.
And that's not even counting. Like, and we didn't even know the guy. Like, we're not even his family or friends. So, like... that's a whole other level of devastating loss.
Of course, yeah.
And,
but, I mean, but just as an audience, like, you can't not be not only sort of moved by his absence, given what he'd accomplished in such short a time, but the circumstances behind it and the suddenness of it. And the, I mean, the suddenness for us, because, you know, he'd managed to keep everything, you know, so close to the vest. And so it takes the wind out of you, you know. I you know, we've worked for publications where, you know, there are people who do nothing but write obituaries for famous people.
Yeah.
With the thought that one of these days they're going to be in use. Like recently, an obit for Olivia de Havilland ran that was written by somebody who was no longer alive.
Right.
You know, but nobody had an obit ready to go for Chadwick Boseman.
No.
You know, and so it's just like, it just pulls a rug out from under you.
Yeah.
And just on a personal note, I just want to say, like, you know, I have a history of colon cancer in my family.
Right.
Please talk about this. I mean, like, I started getting colonoscopies at 35, which is relatively early.
Yeah.
Because that's what's recommended for people who where it's definitely a genetic thing going on. But if you're like 40, start talking to your doctor about it. Start making a plan for when you're going to start having colonoscopies. Whatever your gender, this is an equal opportunity killer.
You hear about it affecting men, but it affects women too.
Yeah. So just, you know, if there's anything good that can come out of this, I hope that it's that more people are aware of the importance of early testing, of treatment, because he knew for what, 4 years, right?
Something like that.
Yeah. And you know, went through treatment, you know, had it is a physically taxing process, and he still managed to like make these amazing movies that were also physically taxing while all that was happening.
Right.
But yeah, like, be mindful of this stuff. It's very important.
So, shifting gears.
Yes.
Let's start talking about the movies. We've got Mulan.
Mm-hmm.
We've got I'm Thinking of Ending Things.
Right.
And we've got a documentary that you may not know about called Feels Good, Man.
Yes, that premiered at Sundance this year and is now available for streaming.
Let's get Mulan out of the way first.
Okay. Now, neither of us had seen the animated version.
Correct.
We were both in our 30s when it came out.
And, yeah.
There's a chunk of Disney cartoons in that period that I did not see Treasure Planet. I never saw Chicken Little. Like there's a span of years there where I was like,
The 90s were a time for Disney animation that I did not prioritize.
Yeah. After Beauty and the Beast.
After Beauty and the Beast, I did not prioritize seeing anything in the Disney output.
Canon.
Yeah. All those animated features of the 90s. Which one did I see? I saw
Hercules, I think, and Pocahontas.
We saw Hercules. I saw a Hunchback of Notre Dame.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
I don't remember. And here's the weird thing. I don't even remember why I saw them. Just like, it was a movie to go see, and there was nothing at the, you know, the Inwood or, you know.
And
so
again,
like,
we're old. If you were a child of the 90s and these were the movies you ran out to see because they were the movies you ran to see,
then that's, yeah.
That's your life.
But we were not, I was not prioritizing them. And so, I didn't see it. And so I cannot compare this one to
its antecedents.
Yes. Unlike Aladdin, which I did see.
Yeah.
Because they took the kids from AIDS Services of Dallas to see it.
Ah.
And, you know, they loved it. And I remember walking out of Aladdin going, eh, sure. Fine. It's fine.
Now this is, I want to say, the first of the live action versions to be absolutely not a musical. Because even like Jungle Book managed to work in a couple of the tunes. Did Cinderella have anything? The Brana Cinderella, do you remember? Were there songs in that? Anyway, I don't remember. I don't even remember what the songs from Cinderella are. Like, Bibbidi Bobbidi Boo, I guess. Like, I don't even. And there's that Cinderella song that the mice sing.
That's a good song.
Yeah. I don't know if any of those made it into the. Anyway, no, there are songs over the closing credits here, but that's it. And there's also no, like, you know, wisecracking dragon sidekick.
Not here. We don't know if there was in the animated.
Well, there was. The Eddie Murphy as Mushu.
Really?
Yes.
Oh, okay. Well, so this is the latest film from Nicky Caro.
Yes.
Who directed Whale Rider.
Right.
And so that's, you know, they finally hired a woman to direct a, you know, big action historical epic over at Disney. That's good. This stars Lu Yifei, I am sorry, killing her name, as Mulan. And it's got an all-star cast surrounding her.
Yes,
Donnie
Yen,
Gong Li, Jet Li, Jason Scott Lee, Rosalind Chow. So many folks.
Tai Ma.
Yeah. As her father.
Yeah.
She lives in a village. She is being, you know, prepared to be matched to, you know, some dude.
Although her chi is strong.
And she can do all sorts of things like jump off roofs and land safely on the ground. And she's strong. She's acrobatic. She can basically fly. And
she has all the qualities of a warrior in an era in which being a warrior is forbidden to her as a woman.
Being in anything is forbidden to women, other than being a married.
Right.
So the but there is a war because there is a rebel force that wants to
unseat the emperor,
take over the emperor. So every family in every village has to send one man from the family. This family has daughters. And Mulan's father is sort of getting older and is not physically able to...
And has been injured in combat before.
To do this, you know, thing. And he is himself is a great warrior and, you know, but that time has passed.
Yeah.
She sneaks out in the night. She takes his armor. She takes his sword. She goes off. She's going to do it. She disguises herself as a young man. And she trains and she bests them all. Becomes, you know, the MVP of the squad. Meanwhile, there's an incredibly cool witch. That's Gong Li. And she is helping the rebel forces because she's, you know...
An outcast.
She's an outcast. And I won't give away what happens to her.
She's an outcast because she is a powerful woman.
That is correct. A really cool witch. Like, you spend most of the movie going, sure, Mulan, you're nice.
But can you turn yourself into birds?
But can you be a super rad witch like Gong Li?
Yeah.
Answer, no.
Hashtag squad goals.
Makes you root for the really cool witch. Honestly. And there are battles. And she fights them. And at one point... her identity, well, things happen.
Yeah.
And so, here's what we think. They're pretty good.
Yeah, it's...
I spent the film watching and wishing that I were seeing it on a big screen.
Well, sure, for starters. It is pretty sumptuous, and unlike something like The Lion King, say, where the CG is in the service of making you believe that animals are talking to each other.
Yes.
You know, here it is kind of put into sort of these big wuxia moments of, like, you know, advancing armies and, you know, like...
And then magical martial arts with, you know...
Exactly.
The kind of soaring and leaping and...
Yeah, you know, if it's wire work, you're erasing that. The wires, or yeah, you're just completely doing whatever with green screen or whatever. Right. I mean, it's weird. Part of me kept thinking about how, you know, Mulan is sacrificing everything to go fight... to preserve a power structure that is implicit in putting her down. Like, all
try not to think about that too much.
I know. And then all of the, like, army training stuff where there's the bonding and the camaraderie and stuff, I couldn't help but think about Starship Troopers, which we recently watched.
Yes,
again.
Yes. Not to think about that as
and
well.
How all of those movies are just propaganda for the military-industrial complex. Anyway, that aside, yes, this is a sumptuous piece of filmmaking.
It's really gorgeous.
It is.
There is so much beautiful everything to look at in this film. Again, it really deserves a big, big screen. And, you know,
maybe one day
you write down front and center,
yeah,
watching it, because it's built to be a spectacle.
Yeah.
And it is, you know, I could feel that coming from our television, which is not especially huge.
Right.
And I wanted to feel it envelop me.
Yeah.
That is what you will miss streaming it at home.
I know this is weird to say, but I think that part of the reason why it translates so well from animated to live action is that it offers not just sort of period spectacle, but also the spectacle of violence.
Right.
You know, I mean, which is a thing that, you know, you can, and many people have animated, but to see that kind of combat, whether it's, you know, somebody doing a flip off of a horse and kicking a spear into somebody right. else's thing, you know, like right. that's, you know, when you're seeing real people do that, no matter how cooked the image is, it's still, you know, pretty stirring.
Mm-hmm. The performances are really good.
Yeah.
I like Liu Yifei. I like I love Gong Li.
Oh my God, Gong Li!
Gong Li's the best. And Donnie Yen gets the entrance he deserves.
Yes.
Like, if it were me, if I were him, I'd have been like, okay, in my contract.
This first appearance
by me is going to be something that you take away, that you remember when you walk out of the theater. And it's exactly what he got.
Well, and I think also, I'm sure Nikki Caro watched a lot of his films to make this one.
Of course.
And so she was very happy to, like, you know, give him that kind of,
yeah,
that arrival, you know. I've heard several people compare this to Hero, which I have not seen.
Oh, Hero's wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, is it as good as Hero?
I
like Hero more.
Okay.
But I do understand the comparisons.
Yes.
It's sweeping. It's spectacular to look at. It's even at the end, emotionally satisfying in a couple ways. Again, I won't spoil those ways, but there's a scene with Mulan and the witch near the end that really, you know, got me.
There are some payoffs, for sure.
So I mean, it's cost a lot of money to rent. You might want to, if you have to own,
quote unquote.
Sure, if you have a family and you want to divide it up by, like, ticket, you know, prices, right, or whatever, sure, it'll be worth your money. But it's like, isn't it like $30?
It is $30,
yeah.
And you have to, it is $30, a one-time fee of $30, but you can only watch it for as long as you have a Disney Plus subscription.
Correct.
However, if you are in a family where you have young children who like to watch things again and again and again,
you'll get to watch it again and again and again.
Then think of it as amortized.
Yeah. So, I also don't want to discount or ignore the representation aspect of this, because Asian stories don't get big screen treatment like this from American
studios.
Sure. And obviously, you know, it's not enough. There need to be more.
Yes.
About contemporary life.
I want my Crazy Rich Asian sequels, and I want them now.
Yeah. So, but I'm glad it exists also for that reason. But, sure, you know, when I said at the beginning of this review, yeah, pretty good. I mean, no, it's very good.
And also, I think I like, obviously Mulan does not fall into the Disney princess category per se, but
no,
as female Disney protagonists,
correct,
particularly in the animated world, she is a very proactive one.
Right.
You know, and one who is not reliant upon, like, her looks or her kindness or,
right,
I mean, like, she is kind and she is, you know, a good person, but she's also, like, you know, there's a physicality.
Loyal,
there,
brave, and true.
Thank you. Also,
yes,
that. Loyal, brave, and true.
Yeah. So the, yeah. You, I would say, if you are of a mind to ever see this at all, you should.
Yeah,
it's worth the time and effort. Now, if you don't have Disney Plus, you'll just wait till Blu-ray.
Yeah,
yeah.
And who knows? Maybe when the world is, you know, less terrible, you know, Disney will give it the theatrical release that they always intended to.
I've been thinking about that lately. Like, when all the theaters are reopened and it's safe to go to them.
Uh-huh.
Currently, some of them are open.
Yeah.
But it's not safe to go there.
No.
At least in the United States.
Not according to most epidemiologists.
What will happen when they are open and it's safe? Will these films get, like, maybe limited theatrical runs?
Maybe a Fathom
just to
event?
Satisfy people, you know, who really wanted to be there for a theater?
Yeah.
That would be nice. Like, I would consider going to see this in a theater just because of how big it is.
Right.
It's just grand, you know, large filmmaking.
I have another movie that we saw this week that I would also love to see in a theater, but for different reasons. But first, let's talk about our sponsor.
Who are they?
Ovid.tv.
Oh, them. They're back.
They are back. And they couldn't have picked a better time, frankly, because they have so much stuff going on in September. It's crazy. They are releasing 33 films this month, which is the most they have ever done in a single month. And seven of those movies I'm super, super excited about because they are directed by the great Marlon Riggs. And if you don't know who Marlon Riggs is, then that alone is reason why you should go check out Ovid.tv, because he is a very important voice in Black queer filmmaking. He is most famous for his film Tongues Untied, which came under fire because of the money that he received from the NEA. Jesse Helms went after it on the floor of Congress. But
homophobic and racist and
dead
Jesse Helms.
But so Tongues Untied is an extraordinary movie, like one of a movie that I got to see when I was first coming out, and it was insanely influential and and moving, and it means a great deal to me. So they're showing Tongues Untied. They are showing Ethnic Notions, his extraordinary documentary Color Adjustment, which is about the history of Black images and characters on television.
Yeah.
Affirmations, Anthem, Non Je Ne Regrette Rien, and Black Is Black Ain't. So like that alone is like, run, don't walk to Ovid.tv. And that's just a sample. Like that, and that's not even counting all the stuff that's carrying over from previous months. So they, you know, as streaming services go, they definitely have stuff you're not going to find in other places. They definitely have stuff that is important and is maybe some of the deeper cuts when it comes to indie and art house and foreign and documentary, but absolutely worth it.
And if you're listening to this show, you are like us.
One would hope.
And you want to see that stuff.
So we have a very special offer for our listeners. You get 50% off your first 3 months at Ovid.tv by using the code Linoleum. That's L-I-N-O-L-E-U-M.
Spell Linoleum. It right or you don't get the discount.
That's right. Linoleum gets you 50% off the first 3 months of your subscription. Use it at checkout at www.ovid, that's O, V as in Victor, I, D as in David, .tv. Ovid.tv, we appreciate your sponsorship. We're so thrilled that you are promoting the work of Marlon Riggs and doing so much other great stuff in the streaming sphere. Check them out. Now, what I was going to say was, another movie that I would really love the opportunity to see in a theater, not for necessarily the same reasons as Mulan, is Charlie Kaufman's latest film, I'm Thinking of Ending Things, which dropped last week on Netflix, but is opening in some cities where theaters are open. One of the marquees we got sent for breakfast all day this week had it showing somewhere.
Oh, really?
And the reason that I would have liked that
Don't go.
Yeah, please don't. Do not.
Don't go to the theater.
Do not go to a movie theater yet, y'all. The reason that I would want to see it projected is because there's so much going on, and it is a movie that is so constantly shape-shifting, you know, like, in your hands, you know, as far as what it is and who it's about and who the characters are and what's even happening. And so I really would have liked to have that sort of dark room experience with it. But even as a streaming title, I found it really fascinating. It is based on a novel that neither of us have read, but from what I have read from people who have read the novel is that this is still very much Charlie Kaufmaning in the book into, you know, something else. It is not entirely the same. Jesse Buckley stars as a young woman who is traveling with her boyfriend, played by Jesse Plemons. And yes, I'm sure having two leads named Jesse is just part of the puzzle box here, but, you know, who knows?
Right.
Anyway, she is traveling with him to visit his parents. They've been dating for 6 or 7 weeks. And the first line in the movie that she's thinking to herself, I'm thinking of ending things, in reference to this relationship.
Yeah.
We spend a great deal of time with them in the car, in the snow, driving to this
farm. The first 22 minutes of this film is the two of them in a car, in a snowstorm, driving to his family's house.
Yes.
Continue.
And, you know, his parents are played by Toni Collette and David Thewlis. And I'm trying to, like, figure out the basically, if you know Kaufman's work, whether it's the films he directed, Synecdoche, New York and Anomalisa, or his screenplays for films like Being John Malkovich or
Eternal Sunshine.
Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind or Confessions of a Dangerous Mind, you know that nothing is going to stay the same for very long. And whatever you think, wherever you think the movie is going and wherever, whatever you think the characters are, is not going to stay that way for long. So there are jumps in time, there are jumps in perspective, there are even jumps in casting at times, and there are side characters that seem not connected to the action, but are connected to the action, and how they're connected is another topic entirely.
You can tell now that we are talking around the film, because a film like this...
It's like trying to explain season three of Twin Peaks.
Giving away details of a film like this... If I tell you... Here's a good example. If I tell you that when they finally get to his parents' house at minute 23, and then they take a meandering walk around the house, and they talk about some pigs... And then they go inside, and the very first thing that Jesse Plemons does is take a thermos from a entryway cabinet and put it into the cabinet. And you don't know why that happened. And you don't know why any of that happened. For me to tell you that those things happened, and that later on in the movie these things matter, is simultaneously, yes, a spoiler, and not one at all.
Yeah, no, this... There was actually somebody who commented on the YouTube page of Breakfast All Day that we had spoiled something. And I almost responded just to say, you can't really spoil anything in this movie. Because if any film lives up to, you know, April Wolf's weekly dictum on Switchblade Sisters, that it's not what happens in a movie, but how it happens.
Yeah.
Even you and I discussing this movie, you know, before doing this episode... We were sort of like, you were pointing out things to me that I hadn't quite caught, and then I was pointing out things to you that you hadn't quite caught.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is a movie that I think will benefit from multiple viewings, assuming that you like or are interested in what Charlie Kaufman does. He is a divisive filmmaker. He's not everybody's cup of tea. I happen to think Synecdoche, New York is one of the best films of this century. You know, and right. I think that his stuff is always interesting, whether or not I'm completely vibing with it. And I vibe with this one a lot, and I have questions, and I would like to explore those questions in further viewings, but I don't necessarily need or want answers.
Right. I know there's an article on the internet somewhere where he sort of explains some things.
Yeah,
Kaufman explains
on IndieWire, I believe. I haven't read it.
I haven't read it either, and I don't think I will.
I don't
because
know that I want to,
before, you know, I will say I'm a fan. I like this guy. I like what he does. I like the things he's written. I like the films he's directed. And I, as a viewer, ambiguity and intentional sort of confusionality,
obfuscation,
doesn't bother me.
Right.
I also don't mind solipsism, which he's always guilty of.
Sure.
But to say guilty suggests that there's something wrong with that. And I think that any kind of filmmaking, it can be the right kind of filmmaking if you handle it in a way that lands the plane.
Sure.
When I say land the plane, I don't mean tying it all up at the end.
No.
I don't mean making everything make sense. Because what Kaufman does is something akin to, although not the same as, what David Lynch does.
Yes.
In that his films don't often make initial sense narratively.
Yeah.
You have to just live in it And what you may find, if you are, you know, in tune with what he's doing, you may find that it makes emotional sense.
Exactly.
And I always have that feeling of emotional sense-making going on in his films. Sometimes I don't know what's going on. I can't explain Being John Malkovich to you at all. But this one felt heartbroken.
Mm.
And maybe even a little self-pitying. But if you experience the things that this man in the film experiences, you might feel a little bit of self-pity yourself, you know? Now, that is not to say that Jesse Plemons' character is the main character.
Right.
It is sometimes a story told from his perspective. It is sometimes a story told from Jesse Buckley's perspective. Occasionally it feels like there is an omniscience going on.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't even feel all the time like it's a film that is taking place in the moment that it's taking place.
Exactly. Yeah. He's playing with a lot of things here, but you're right. I think that there is an emotional through line to this.
Yeah.
It does carry, even if the narrative isn't tidy.
No. So first viewing, dig it.
Yeah.
I felt it by the end. In fact, without giving stuff away,
mm-hmm.
The first moment it felt to me as though, oh, wait, this isn't happening now. This is happening at some time in the past,
mm-hmm.
which is the present. And when I put that together in my head, I thought, oh, no. Like, that was my reaction.
Right.
Not, oh, no, this movie, but, oh, no, these people.
The implications of that.
Yeah. Yes. And so I can't say that it's an upbeat film.
Oh, God, no.
And that you're going to be happy when it's over. And if that's not what you're in for right now, if that's not what you're into during this incredibly difficult and ugly and bizarre time in the history of our country.
Mm.
If you only want something that lifts you up and makes you feel nice, more power to you. Bill and Ted Face the Music is streaming. You'll be very happy when that one's over. But I like to quote my niece. When she was 5, she's 18 now.
Mm.
And I guarantee you, she doesn't even remember saying this to me.
Probably not.
We were watching an animal rescue show on like Animal Planet or Discovery, yeah, or one of those. Sort of pretty harrowing animal rescue show about a horse that was neglected and abused. Mm. And that finds a home and a veterinarian to take care of it and all this kind of stuff.
Right.
Commercial comes on, she looks right at me, whips her head right at me, and she says, Uncle Dave, I like this because it's sad. And I was like, you and me, kid, we get each other. I know you. I love the performances in this film.
Oh, God,
as
yes,
well.
Yes.
A
thing he's really good at that I don't think he always gets credit for. Because people talk so much about the ideas in his movies.
Yeah.
But like all the acting in Synecdoche, New York, for instance, is so extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And here as well.
I think David Thewlis and Toni Collette have a bit of a thankless task.
It's tricky.
But Jesse Plemons and Jesse Buckley,
yeah,
are not only wonderful together as people who shouldn't be together.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I love about Jesse Plemons, and that he has discussed very recently in a New York Times interview with Kyle Buchanan,
yeah,
is the way that he underplays pretty much everything. And that's not the same as not acting.
Right.
that's absolute control. And he does it and makes it look easy.
Yeah.
And I think that's just amazing. And that's my favorite kind of performance.
Well, it's the difference between screen acting and stage acting.
Yeah.
You know, you're not conveying an emotion to the back balcony. You have a camera that is inches away from your face. And so you can do very little and register a lot if you know how to make that little count, you know.
And so, you know, this is a guy who's been doing this since he was 3.
Right.
And again, with that article in the New York Times, they talk about how that's how he and Kirsten Dunst sort of bonded with each other. They were like, oh, we were both little kids when we started doing this. Now they're married and baby and the whole everything. But he, you know, he played Philip Seymour Hoffman's son.
Oh, right. In The Master.
In The Master.
Yeah.
And, you know, not just because of that, not just because of the look involved, but, you know, he's got that same thing.
Yeah.
That Philip Seymour Hoffman had.
Mm. True. I'm sure that probably played a part in why Kaufman wanted to cast him. I also need to read Kaufman's novel. That's next on my agenda. That came out this summer. Because it's all about film critics.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you interviewed him. He was nice to you.
He was nice to me. Yeah. He has a weird thing about film critics where, like, there's some level of disdain, but there's also this clearly an interest level as well. Like he's the last person.
You don't make A.O. Scott a character in your novel.
Right.
If you don't care about film critics.
Yeah. Like, you know, there are so many artists who try to play the, oh, I don't even read reviews. It would just be too, it would be second guessing myself.
That's a good thing to do, I think, sometimes.
If you can, great. But I think most people need to know or want to know. And I think Kaufman clearly reads the reviews. So, you know, he's never gotten a bad one from me as a director anyway. I got to interview him at the Carlo Vivari Festival a couple years ago, and he was very charming. And this didn't come up because it hadn't really been announced yet. We were talking about other projects he'd been trying to get off the ground. I think he's fascinating. I'm thrilled that he's directing again because after Synecdoche flopped, and then even Anomalisa underperformed. I think there was some concern about whether or not anybody else was going to hire him. And like, look, if Netflix is going to be throwing their money around and some of it's going to land on Charlie Kaufman,
good.
Great.
Yeah.
I'm for it.
So now, a documentary.
Yes.
That you may not know exists because it's, you know, it's pretty small.
Yeah.
But it was at Sundance.
Mm-hmm.
It's called Feels Good, Man. And before we tell you about it, I have a backstory that is not about what happens in the documentary at all.
Right.
It's about me. I love contemporary art. In the past, when the budget was better, sometimes I would buy some from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
What is known in the contemporary art world as emerging artists,
yes.
A.K.A. the ones you can afford. There's a wonderful gallery in Los Angeles called New Image Art Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, I bought, you know, many things from that gallery. The owner, curator, the gallerist, her name is Marcia Goldberg. She specialized in, it's still open. She still does this.
Yes.
Specializes in
emerging,
getting new artists into the hands of new buyers.
Hmm.
And occasionally some Richie Richardsons who, you know, swoop in and pick up things as well. But So one night, there was a show of an artist that I had not heard of before named Matt Fury. And his work is very comic-based, illustration-based, cartoony.
Yeah.
And just eye-popping and, you know, imaginative. And there was a piece that was... How many creatures are in this piece?
Dozens
of them. All, you know, sort of in a big mass.
Yeah.
So you mostly see them from like the shoulders up, whatever they are. You know, wild creatures.
Aliens and
monsters and blobs and, you know,
anthropomorphic
food and, you know, a hamburger that talks, you know. And I saw it and I immediately loved it. And I thought, I don't know who this guy is. I'm buying this right now. So I did. And, you know, original piece of art, not a print, you know. The one I own is the one that exists. In this group of creatures is a little frog. Matt Fury named the frog Pepe, put him in a comic book called Boys Club. I bought the first two. I don't know how many there were, but I bought the first two copies of Boys Club when that came out. Because I was like, oh, Matt Fury, I love that dude. I owned a piece of his art. And here's this comic book. You know, it was up on his MySpace page, all these, you know, Pepe comics. And the expression, feels good, man, became Pepe's sort of catchphrase in the comics for whatever he was doing. It initially was because he would drop his pants to pee. And his friends would be like, why are you doing that? And he'd say, feels good, man. And then things happened.
Yes.
8 to 10 years later. Because that's how long Pepe was around.
Yeah.
Before
Reddit.
Before the bad people got a hold of him.
Yes.
First, Pepe became a meme.
Yeah.
And fairly innocuous, but clearly snowballing into something.
Yeah.
And to cut this very convoluted and complicated story short, eventually the meme became Pepe as anti-Semitic, as racist, as Donald Trump, as
alt-right,
a Nazi, as the everything that is disgusting about the United States right now.
Yes. None of which has anything to do with Matt Fury.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Matt Fury initially is watching this, and here's where we get to the backstory has ended. Now we're in the documentary. Mm-hmm. Matt Fury is watching the memes take over and thinking, well, I guess he's going to be a meme now. There's nothing I can do about that. And it's harmless until it wasn't harmless anymore.
Right.
And then he was like, oh no. Like, what can I do? And the sad, terrible answer is, there ain't nothing you can do about this other than sue people for copyright infringement if they try to make money
right
off this character.
Creation.
And he did successfully sue Alex Jones, which was fantastic. He could not stop the tide of Pepe's appropriation. And that is what this documentary is about.
Yeah. It's about basically how the creation of one artist can then just sort of go into the ether and be completely transmogrified into something else, about how the internet works and how certain shadowy corners of the internet operate and who's doing it and why. It gets into cryptocurrency, which I still don't understand.
The cryptocurrency element of this is, we're jumping way ahead, but eventually Pepe becomes an emblem of cryptocurrency as well. And these cryptocurrency people make lots of money trading rare versions of Pepe. And I don't understand any of that.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, as this part of the documentary explains itself or tries to explain itself. I thought, hey, man, I've got a rare Pepe. It's on the wall. And it's a genuinely rare Pepe. There's only one.
So, yeah, but in a larger sense, this movie is about, you know, what happens when you're a creator and your creation is basically taken away from you and put in a completely different context.
Right.
How do you try and get that back?
And can you redeem the thing?
Yeah.
In a limited way.
Yeah.
That's it. And you can feel like the tension in this documentary that, you know, you're the creator of a thing that has turned into a symbol of pure hate and a smug version of trolling that, well, I guess all trolling is smug, but you know what I mean. Like the kind of trolling that wants to shock you and then wants to laugh at you because you were shocked.
Right. That wants to like dredge up the most horrifying ideas possible, but then if you get upset about it, that's on you because ha-ha, just kidding.
Yeah. It cloaks itself in irony that isn't really irony.
Yeah.
That is intentionally, brutally hateful.
It only exists as a deflection.
Yeah. There's a wide cast of characters in this film, including a 4chan guy who is proud of his contributions to the, you know, the destruction of what Pepe's original intention was.
Yeah.
And I look at a guy like that in the film and I think, what's your life? You know, like what's your life going to be? You know, you look like you're in your 20s. And you're a disaster. I mean, the guy in this film who, this young sort of edgelord kind of, you know, person.
I think this would be a valuable movie for people involved in politics to see.
Oh, for sure.
Because I feel like there's a lot going on out there that they aren't even thinking about. And it's like, yeah, that's great that you can now put Biden signs up in Animal Crossing.
Right.
But there's a whole other like chunk of the web that is doing all kinds of horrifying stuff. Like this movie basically posits,
chaos for the sake of chaos.
Exactly. This movie kind of posits that there's a chunk of people on the internet for whom the election of Donald Trump was just sort of the ultimate like prank.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's unsettling, but it's fascinating.
They when Donald Trump wins, you see 4chan, you know, message like, "Oh man, we memed him into office."
Yeah.
Ha ha ha. But well, good luck.
While this movie does have...
You see how well that's turned out.
Yeah. This movie has some disturbing moments. It does end on an up note, and it ends on a note of hope.
Ends on a note of hope for Matt Fury, which I was happy about.
Yes.
Because I felt so sorry for him throughout the whole film. Because, you know, he's that kind of guy that, based on what I've seen... Like, I met him the night of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just very chill, very laid back. He lives
in San Francisco.
He's that stonery skateboarding artist kind of dude who just wants chill vibes for everybody. Like that's how he comes off. And if you are that person in the world, and terrible people get in your way, and try to, you know, kick you. What did you do to deserve that?
Exactly.
You know, nothing. And they don't even care. Like, that's the other thing. Is like, the person whose creation they took and warped is a person they would hate.
Yeah.
Because he cares about things.
Right.
You know? He wants to draw beautiful children's books about animals. Yeah, you know,
he's
like,
not a goblin the way these people are.
And so... But they don't care about the original intent of this cartoon character.
No.
They care about what they can do
to own the libs,
to own the sincere people.
Yes,
and that's ultimately what it comes down to. Are you sincere? F you.
Yeah.
We're going to ruin you. Highly recommend you watch this.
Yes, you should check it out. It is streaming in
especially,
all
you know what? Show it to your parents because, like, it explains the internet and meme culture and what that means in ways that I don't think a lot of, like, baby boomers and older understand. Because if you notice now on Facebook, the conservative baby boomers communicate quite a bit in memes.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think they know what they're doing.
What if they watched God Friended Me?
Too late. It was canceled.
Oh, well. Yeah. Okay. Then yes, show them this.
Two glorious spiritual seasons of God Friended Me. Anyway, feels good, man. That's the name of the documentary.
Yeah.
You have to say it like that, too.
You do.
When you talk about it. You can't just be... It's called Feels Good, Man.
Feels Good, Man.
Feels Good, Man. The there's a really... The clips of reporters trying to explain Pepe are very funny. This appears to be the Grinch. Yeah. Like, okay. Oh, yeah, like Samantha Bee.
Yes.
Didn't know what it was. Like, she did a whole bit of it and then didn't have any understanding as to what it was before.
From, yeah.
This documentary is something.
Yeah. It covers a lot of different bases in a really good way.
You also get to see Richard Spencer get punched again.
Yes.
Which you can never see enough times.
That never gets old. do you have a DVD pick this week?
I do.
What do you got?
The Tammy Show.
Ooh, yes.
I had never seen it. Find out if it's actually available.
I was just about to ask you, is it available?
DVD.
Always do this. Go ahead. You
yeah, it's, available. It's totally available.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. I just pulled it up. It is one of the seminal rock concert films that I had never seen. And it just happened to be on TCM the other night. We sat down after dinner and boom, it was coming on. Mm-hmm. And we watched the whole thing. I even stayed up past my bedtime.
What?
Because it was so good. This is a documentary from 1964. Shot over two nights at the Santa Monica Civic Auditorium, which is where I saw My Bloody Valentine a few years back. This concert was incredibly influential, and little did anyone know at the time, but it would become the basis for probably the most famous concert footage of James Brown ever recorded.
Yeah, if you saw Get On Up, Chadwick Boseman apparently watched this movie a lot as research, and Mick Jagger, who produced Get On Up,
yes,
I think part of his ongoing respect for James Brown stemmed from this very evening.
Oh, this very evening was definitely that, because of that.
Yeah.
Or that caused this. The Rolling Stones were the headliners. This did not make James Brown happy. But the Rolling Stones were the hot new.
Yeah.
And they were white.
Yeah.
And so they were the headliners. And they followed him. He was the last act before the Rolling Stones. And James Brown was angry about this. And because he was angry, he did his best to make it impossible for them to follow him. And he did. And you can see Mick Jagger trying afterwards, but clearly, like, his confidence has been a bit shaken.
James Brown has mopped the floor at this point.
And so that's a fascinating element. The 18 minutes that James Brown is on stage is, like, it is literally legendary. Mm. People have written about this 18 minutes of performance in many different places. But the movie doesn't just have them. It's got the Supremes, who had just started having chart hits.
Yes.
The Beach Boys, just as Brian Wilson, at age 21, was about to stop touring with the band because he was already experiencing mental health problems.
Yeah.
And, oh my God, the Beach Boys footage is astonishing because as you watch it, you think, okay, well, this was 56 years ago. I know, because that's how old I am. It was the year I was born that this was made. These dudes are harmonizing live in a way that sounds like it was just lip-syncing to a record.
Yeah.
That's how good they were. That's how much they rehearsed, obviously. And to hear them do it live is just thrilling. You know, you have, then you have other people, bands that like kind of went nowhere.
Yeah.
And they're sort of interesting little, you know, curiosities.
You start Wikipedia-ing them, you're like, oh, okay.
Okay. Oh, you were that. All right. I get it. And here's a funny thing I learned, while watching it. The biggest star of the moment, although she was not the headliner, which is weird. Like, you would think that because she was the biggest star of that moment, that she would have been the headliner, but no, you know.
She was a woman.
A woman. Leslie Gore.
Yep.
Who, along with Dusty Springfield, two of the coolest white lesbians of pop music.
Ever.
So, boy, do I it took me a long time to get here, but I finally saw it, and everyone must see this.
Yeah, it's super entertaining.
I had actually seen the Brown footage before, because it's so
well-known.
Yeah, yeah. But I had not seen any of the rest of it before, and it's staggering.
If it takes just the Supremes wigs to get you in on this...
And they're good, too.
They're... Wow.
Diana Ross has an enormous wig, and it's just... It's glorious.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So mine is for people who watch Mulan and think, say, I'd like to see more of that Gong Li.
Oh, you know who we forgot to talk about?
What, who?
Terry Garr.
Oh, yes, right.
Sorry. Sorry. I did not know what was going to happen in the Tammy show, but the go-go dancers come out in the back, and they stay on stage for pretty much the entire film, except during James Brown's set. And I see this blonde woman in the back, and I said to you, look it up. Is that Terry Garr? Because she was a dancer before.
Yes.
And any beach party movie, any beach party movie that came from the 60s, Terry Garr's in that beach party
movie.
She's
doing a wild frug in the background.
Dancing, yeah. Sure enough, here's Terry Garr. Dancing her ass off during this entire film. Anyway, go on. Your pick.
If I may.
Yes, please do.
If you watched Mulan and want to see more Gong Li, may I recommend a brand new Blu-ray of Zhang Yimou's Shanghai Triad.
Oh.
Yeah.
It's new on Blu-ray?
New on Blu-ray. The first time it's been released on Blu-ray in the United States. It won the Cinematography Prize at the Cannes Film Festival and from LA Film Critics and was nominated for an Oscar for that. And it is a gorgeous 1930s gangster movie. So it's Gong Li wearing gorgeous 1930s outfits.
Yeah. and giving this like wrenching performance.
Oh, yeah.
That... Oh, man, I love this movie.
Yeah.
And it's been, when did it come out? 94, 95, 93, something like that. It's been that long since I've seen it.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's never been available in North America on Blu-ray before. It is one of several great movies that that Gong Li and Zhang Yimou made together.
Yeah.
So, check it out.
We got a letter.
We do.
Wait, let me pull it up.
That would help. Generally.
I know you like it when I pull
up the letters. My experience has been... that if you have the letter in front of you, then you can
read. Well, I don't currently have the letter in front of me. Oh my. But I'm going to, it's going to be here any moment.
Y'all, we're coming up on the 10th anniversary of this program.
You just stop.
Just want to let you know about that.
Shoddy. Get my glasses on here. Dear David Alonzo. As a gay woman of color, I want to throw in my opinion of Tenet. before the army of white dude bros swarm your castle. Well, you're in luck, Shoddy, because we don't have a lot of those. And the ones we do are pretty nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've been so lucky as critics who have a podcast that those dudes, if they ever listened to us, they ignored us after a few episodes and moved on.
Yeah.
Like, I feel very grateful.
Too gay and too much talk about cake.
I honestly believe it's because we're queer. I think that's one reason why most of them have stayed away.
Don't want them, don't need them.
Yeah. And those of you who are white dude bros,
thank you.
You're very nice to us, so thank you. You're the kind that should keep being.
Yes.
Anyway, she continues. Here's my review. John David Washington is a GD movie star who can navigate your emotions about a story no matter how overwrought a concept Christopher Nolan lays on him. I know people have problems with hearing the dialogue in Tenet, and those who actually could hear the movie will probably take to their blogs and YouTubes to mansplain to me how Mr. Nolan's logic is completely flawed and how this perfect mousetrap is not so perfect after all. Pish posh! Now, I'm going to interrupt this letter a little bit to say neither of us have seen this film.
Nope.
But some of y'all have. So we wanted to read the letter for those of you who have seen the film.
Yes. But really, if you haven't, don't go to a theater.
Don't go to a theater. Go to a drive-in. Don't go to a movie theater, please. Okay. At the end of the day, this is another movie that ends with, cut the right cable or the earth will blow up.
Oh, I hope there's a big red LED display.
I have only one question, though. Why would anyone store
pieces of a time machine?
I'm not understanding the sentence. Also, I think that it involves a spoiler that I would like to avoid.
Okay.
So I'm going to blip over this sentence and keep moving. But honestly, I don't care that when you time travel, your farts go back up your butt or that fire turns to ice when your car blows up. What I do care about is that unlike Leonardo DiCaprio or Christian Bale or Hugh Jackman, Mr. Washington gives a full-blooded performance, which makes the audience believe that he believes in all of this stuff. Again, spoilery kind of details.
Okay.
In conclusion, I am very, all caps, very proud to see more all caps, this Superfly brother, B-R-O-T-H-A, make a way better James Bond than that snooze fest Daniel Craig.
Oh.
And sort of avenge the honor of Idris Elba, who was teased but alas never hired by those racist Bond producers. Thank you for making me laugh with your bickering every week. Kiss you both. And now part two to this letter, subject line addendum to my previous Tenet letter. Sorry, during my John David Washington induced ebullience, I forgot to talk about a scene in Tenet that I find utterly objectionable and nauseatingly out of place. Okay, so let me read what this is. And, okay. This also counts as details that may be spoilerish, but again, I have not seen the film. And to me, personally, spoilers don't matter.
Mm.
As April says, not what happens, but how it happens.
Exactly.
But I know that many of y'all have not seen this film yet. I don't want to talk about this scene.
Can you be vague?
It involves... it involves Elizabeth Debicki.
Mm-hmm.
And the abuse that she deals with from
another character,
other people. Okay. So I'll pick this up. Straight white men need to stop using graphic violence against women as a tool to bring gravitas to their generic villains.
Mm.
Can't say that I disagree with that.
Yeah.
But again, I have not seen the film.
They call it fridging in the comics.
So anyway, okay. Moreover, as much as I enjoy Mr. Nolan's puzzle box blockbusters, I think we can all agree that his record on writing for women and minorities has been checkered at best. He is basically a brainier version of Guy Ritchie. Thank you again for being one of the few podcasts where I can make this plea without being patronized or trivialized. Sincerely, Shadi Alai Schaefer.
Wow.
I want, obviously, I want to see this film.
Sure.
And I want to see this thing that you were talking about.
Yes.
So that I can, have a full, it's not possible for me to weigh in on this.
Right.
Because, because I haven't seen it. So, I hope that's okay that we didn't read the thing, but that it involves the abuse of a woman. Well, yes. We can say that
yes.
without getting too deep in the details. The but you know what? I basically agree with that. I mean, I don't think that anything should be off limits in a film.
Right.
In terms of subject matter, but I do agree fully, like any rational person should, that using it as something to just hang your, as she said, your gravitas
right
on,
especially for a character that's not being any other given any other kind of that agency is
shallow.
Or plot import,
that is shallow character writing.
Yes, but again, we haven't seen it.
So thank you, Shadi. We are absolutely not here to patronize or trivialize.
No.
We are going to see this film eventually. And
one of these days.
We're going to return to this subject.
Yes.
Because eventually, when most people have had a chance to see it, we can have a longer discussion about this sort of thing. Because she's right. This happens all the time.
Oh, yeah.
This is a constant. This is damsel in distress stuff from the time of,
two reelers.
Yeah. Silent films where the woman is tied to a railroad track. It's that kind of thing.
Yeah.
So we're not into it.
Yeah. Pass. All right. Well, hey, thanks for listening. Just a quick reminder that we do have a Patreon page at patreon.com/linoleumknife. Lots of cool extra content that only our subscribers get, starting for as little as $1 a month. And going up from there, and the higher you go, the more you get from us, including LKTV, a podcast of the television, Linoleum Knife and Fork, a food podcast hosted by two film critics, Linoleum Nights, monthly stream along, watch along club meetings.
And Linoleum Knife presents more Linoleum Knife.
And more, yes.
And LKRX, where we provide daily cultural recommendations, everything from... Well, everything.
Everything.
Sometimes movies, but quite often it's books, music.
Condiments.
Yeah. Today was a recipe.
Because
I don't do that very often. People listen to Linoleum Knife and Fork, but some people don't. And
sure.
So, they
should. They're missing out on things.
They're missing out on some things.
So anyway, patreon.com/linoleumknife. Check that out. Once again, use the promo code linoleum at ovid.tv and get 50% off the first 3 months of your Ovid TV subscription. Check out our friends on the internet. See what Bibbs and Whitney are up to over at the Critically Acclaimed Network. Listen to the Schmoes Know. Dennis Anyone with Dennis Hensley. The Comics Canon, Sewers of Paris, All Things Cozy, Deck the Hallmark, Fat Guys at the Movies, the Big Fat Gay Podcast, Secretly Timid, and the Criterion Cast. You can subscribe to this show for free at at Apple Podcasts and leave us a 5-star review there. We will read it on the show if you do. You can also leave us positive feedback in the many places that we stream, like Stitcher Radio and Spotify and Google Play and CastBox. You can follow us on social media at LinoleumCast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Thank you, Blue, for our theme music. You can see what he's up to over on Twitter at Blutopia, BLEUTOPIA. And finally, you can drop us a line at linoleumpodcast@gmail.com. Hope everyone is staying well and cozy. Take care of yourselves and each other. And
it's too hot to be cozy.
Well, yeah, I'd be cozy in the broader sense of comfort.
Well-being and comfort.
Exactly.
Okay, I get that.
Until next time.
Goodbye.